in our tradition of yoga, sitting meditation particularly, most of the time we have our eyes open. In shamatha practice, calm abiding practice, usually maybe just 30 30 degree angle, just looking down in front. Sometimes in Dzogchen Mahamudra practice, sometimes straight ahead. In any case, we're not shutting out the visual field, nor are we shutting out our thoughts. Very pithy and pith instruction teaching from one of my teachers, Dingyo Kensei Rinpoche, talks about how in our practice we don't centralize within and we don't centralize without. Being present means you're not going in and you're not going out. So we have all our senses open. We're not trying to block thoughts. We're not trying to block visual images. We're not trying to block sounds. We're not trying to block sights or smells or tastes or touch. But we're dwelling undisturbed within that mandala. So for those people that are used to sitting with eyes closed and going in, try having eyes open and not going anywhere. No need to go out, right? So the emphasis in this practice, both particularly Mahamudra and Dzogchen from this point of view, is we don't want to be anywhere else. Can't really be anywhere else anyway, right? Would it be okay just to like be here and be present without trying to gain a higher state or gain a more internal state or gain a state somewhere in the future? Would that be okay just to be present? It makes life a lot easier. So let's try with like eyes open for those people that it's new. For those people that are already doing it, that's great. When everyone in the room is deciding that they want to be present, then you can feel the shift in energy. It's quite remarkable. I mentioned a number of times when I was attending a Kala Chakra initiation with Dalai Lama in Toronto. You know, he started his talk by saying, "I don't know about you guys, but did anybody feel their wind shift? You know, around 2 o'clock this morning, I felt go from one channel to the other." You know, we're all going, "No, I didn't feel it," but it happens. So by everyone making at least intention to be present in the room, with all their thoughts, with all their sights, with all your smells, with all your everything, then the quality of the energy actually can shift. It's possible to do that. So let's, can we give it a try? All right. Easy. Sounds easy. Chapter 6 of the Lotus Sutras, Assurance of Becoming a Buddha. This is the Mahayana version of Garab Dorje's three tenets or three points, second of which is and decide on one thing. In the last retreat, you know, I talked about, we studied the Ganges Mahamudra of Tilopa and Garab Dorje's three principles, second of which is decide on one thing and one thing only. The Lotus Sutra, in its own imaginal and encouraging and bodhisattva way, says you will become a Buddha. Some people can only hear things and develop faith and confidence if it's in the future. This is skillful means. If people receive the pith instructions of Garab Dorje or the wonderful commentary by Paltrow Rinpoche, they may go, well, I don't believe it. Maybe that's true for others, but not for me. So skillfully, we have to tell people, well, in that case, you will be a Buddha in the future. And then people will go, okay, I'll do that. So, in our tradition, we combine, and when I say our tradition, I mean the whole Vajrayana tradition, is we combine the Bodhisattva practices and the highest yoga, Mahamudra and Dzogchen practices together. They're somewhat contradictory, right? Like, we're Buddha right now, and you will be also Buddha in the future. A little bit contradictory, perhaps. Even saying, decide upon one thing, or be awake now, perhaps that's also a skillful means. At some point, my teacher kept me practicing long enough, had enough darshan, had enough retreats, where I ran out of explanations and realizations. Wouldn't that be nice? You run out of explanations and you run out of, you just stop. This is the third noble truth, nirodha, cessation. Cessation is where you really just roll to a stop. In my high school days in Colorado, we didn't have much to do. So we used to just, well, take our parents' cars out and, well, drink and drive, right? So sometimes you didn't have any money, so anyway, has anybody ever like run out of gas in eastern Colorado? Do you remember the last time you like rolled to a stop because you're out of gas? That's nirodha. Stopping. It's not putting on the brakes. That's still relative practice. Relative practice is important. Conventional practice is important. We're doing harmful activities. We're doing something silly. We're believing in duality, so you put on the brakes. Stop it, right? The non-dual practices are we're rolling to a stop. We're using up all our explanations, all our theories, all our hopes and fears until we can't stop ourselves from stopping. It's not that you make a decision to stop. You're literally out of ego gas, so you stop. There's nothing like rolling to a stop and your mom's Chevy and you know, the windows are down or something, and you hear that sound of the gravel or the, you know. And of course, even when you know it's out of gas, you kind of turn the ignition again. Okay. But then you hear just the kind of wind. Yeah. So this is like deciding on one thing is, yep, we're out of gas. Okay, so deciding on one thing or knowing we're going to become a Buddha isn't like, okay, I've decided, this is it, you know. It's not like that, ladies and gentlemen. It isn't like, okay, I've decided. I'm just resting in my natural awareness. That's a conscious kind of thought, right? It's like, okay, I've decided. How's it going? I decided. Okay, I'm this. I've decided. No. It's a surprise. First comes the surprise because you don't really expect it. And then comes some recognition after the surprise. And then perhaps some laughter. Whoa, we're out of gas. Stopped. Nirodha. So Nirodha, stopping, isn't putting on the brakes. That's why thought blocking, closing your eyes, deciding you're not going to be aware of the person sitting next to you, that's relative practice, right? That's not going to do it. You can't stop the flow of thoughts. You can't stop yourself hearing. You can't stop yourself thinking, hearing, feeling, touching, breathing. But you can roll to a stop with things that actually don't exist. We wear out the explanations, we wear out the duality because you use it up. You don't decide, now I'm going to stop thinking dualistically, now I'm going to stop being, you know, now I'm going to drop my ego or something like that. Okay, so you have to roll to a stop. And usually you have to like check it a little bit, see. That's why the third point is see the manifestation, usually translated as thoughts, as self-liberated. Because even after we roll to a stop, something's going to manifest from that, right? So many times when people are looking at Four Noble Truths, truth of suffering, truth of cause, truth of cessation, truth of the path, they kind of skip over cessation. But cessation in the higher teachings doesn't mean you stop wanting to have chocolate or you stop anything in particular. It means you're starting to hear the sound of the wind on the plains instead of the sound of your engine. You're starting to hear for the first time your feet on the gravel as you walk 20 miles back into town. That's a different experience, right? Yeah. So when we say stopping, we don't mean extinction, right? We don't mean like suicide. We don't mean now you don't hear, feel, touch, or taste anything. We say we've stopped the delusion. We've stopped the dualistic fantasy, and now we actually, you know, hear, see, and touch, taste properly. If you're completely open to seeing or tasting or touching or thinking or feeling, then what are you? Someone who's completely open knows what it is to touch, know what it is to taste, know what it is to feel, know what it is to think, know what it is to see, then what are you? Buddha, you're awake to everything, right? It's all woken up. But sometimes we don't want to really run out of gas. Probably no one here wants to run out of gas, right? Like we're too old for that, right? We don't want to do that. So we give a future stopping. And hypnosis is called a future pacing. In the future, you will become a Buddha. If you knew that for certain, if you really like, maybe not for me, because you're thinking, oh, that's just this guy in Sacramento, but maybe if you met, you know, private darshan with Dalai Lama, right? If you're able to get 10 minutes or 15, maybe 20, I don't know, and you just want to say, you know, just, okay, I need to know. Am I a schmuck? Can I do it? just tell me, you know. And what if the Dalai Lama really just looked you in the eyes and said, well, actually, in the future, maybe even this lifetime, just this lifetime, you'll be fully awake. Would you believe the Dalai Lama? Would you go, well, I don't know. Even Dalai Lama can be wrong. What would you do, right? So for skillful means, because we're still in dualistic thought, that may actually sink in and you may kind of roll to a stop. You may think, wow, all the games and strategies I had planned when I got home are like really silly. So I've just received this incredible vote of confidence from someone I consider a Buddha. So, you know, I'm leading my life differently, or maybe seeing it with new eyes. We should do these little tests sometimes, you know. Let's say you finally got to see the Dalai Lama. And, you know, maybe that wasn't a question, but you actually, the Dalai Lama saying, you know, there's lots of practices that, you know, you could do. So you ask the Dalai Lama, I don't know, what's the practice I should do? And what if the Dalai Lama said, actually, you need a year-long retreat focused on forgiving your mother. Would you do it? 3 years? Would you do whatever practice the Dalai Lama said? What if the Dalai Lama said, you said, I just want the practice so that in this lifetime I'll become realized, and just tell me what to do. Would you be ready for anything Dalai Lama said? That would be stopping. That's like, you know, just rolling to a stop, like, you know. I mean, he might just say, don't leave Dharamsala, just stay right here, cancel your plane trip. Would you go, well, wait a minute, I got some pets at home or something, or you know, I got a job or something, you know. We have to think like that, you know. If, you know, you finally make it, you know. How many people growing up in Christian tradition have thought, you know, actually, if I just met Jesus, if I was just there, I would just go, I wouldn't be like, you know, doubting Thomas or, you know, the rest of the people that didn't figure it out. I would go, I'd be on it, you know. You know, Jesus said, come follow me. I would go, yeah, I'm on. I'm, you know, I'm dropping my stuff, you know. So having that kind of confidence, deciding on one thing, or deciding even being a Buddha in the future, is like rolling to a stop. It's like third noble truth. Just all, it's just wiped out, right? We had tons of plans if we went to Dharamsala, and we just said, okay, I'm going to ask the Dalai Lama and do whatever Dalai Lama says, and that's it. That's like being out in the middle of eastern Colorado with no gas, you know, like right? Rolling. That's deciding on one thing, or deciding going to be Buddha. We're usually always strategizing, aren't we? We are kind of like, okay, God, that's good practice. I should be doing a long retreat. That's fantastic. But I've got these other things to do first. Or that's really good practice, but I don't like doing, you know, medicine Buddha practice. I do Sima Mukha or something like that. Or God, you asked me to do Chenrezig practice, Lama, you know. Let's say Dalai Lama said, oh, well, just do Chenrezig practice. And you go, really? And he goes, yeah, just do Mani Mantra. And you go, well, everyone does. I mean, can I, you know, I mean, seriously? I mean, you want me to do what everyone else is doing? Would you do it? Or would you think, ah, I want, you know, a 15 deity higher griva practice with fire puja, with, you know, with of course all the soak offerings and all the, you know, torma, everything. You know, no, I don't want to, you know. So roll to a stop. We wear it out, and then you really can see it. Okay, let's have a few questions, and then we'll do some more, a little bit more sitting. Sometimes it's good to clarify these things, and then even intellectually we can clarify some doubts. Hi, Tom. Yeah, we're rolling moment to moment.
We're rolling. And I guess we can't consciously choose to stop, but that's what meditation does.
We're wearing ourselves out. Mm-hmm. We're wearing out the dualistic mind. And we don't know actually quite when that's going to happen. And that's the kind of surprise piece that's really important. If we know exactly when it's going to happen, we're kind of, you know, watching and strategically kind of, you know, kind of like a cat at the mouse hole, you know. So the practices are designed to wear out the dualistic mind, because you can't really attain awareness. You know, you can't really attain it in that sense. We also say in Heart Sutra, we can't not attain it, but we're wearing it out. But we don't know exactly when that's going to be. It's somewhat of a surprise, but we can kind of feel it. I mean, there's nothing. It's not like it's supposed to hit you over the head out of the blue. We can see the kind of gauge going down a little bit, right? But still, it's kind of a bit of a surprise, like that. You know, just like somewhat death will be a little bit, where I'll go, well, I know we all have to die and everything, but we will be going kind of like, if we're not drugged up or, you know, we'll be kind of going, well, oh, okay, you know, it's now, right? It'll be a little bit of a surprise, like that. So it's happening continuously that we're wearing it out. We don't recognize that. That's the funny part. The recognition factor has to be combined with the wearing out factor, and then we kind of go, "Oh, I'm out of gas," like that. But it's still a surprise, you know. Could be surprised with laughter, might be surprised with disappointment, though. It's possible. Could be disappointing. That's encouraging, isn't it? For those of us tend toward depression, you know, we can, oh, I don't have to cheer up. It could be disappointing. Well, see, you know, this is kind of a fun talk tonight, but we're going to continue. You know, our particular Buddha family style just continues as we run out, right? So, I mean, if you're kind of a cheerful, funny person, maybe then it'll be like that, but. The tone of disappointment will kind of it kind of just keeps running through. I mean, if your natural tone is kind of disappointing, you can be disappointedly awake. See, we have this fantasy that, you know, wakefulness is, then you suddenly kind of become a different person, or, you know. So, actually, sometimes it can be a little bit more. My particular style, I trust it more when people are a little disappointed, and they're like, "I thought it would be so much more interesting, you know, like more dramatic or something like that." But that doesn't mean that it can't be dramatic. It's just my own personal style is. It might be dramatic. Let's say we're dramatic people. So let's say you're naturally like over the top Sicilian or something. So you're going to carry that in to, what you're waking up, you know. There's no way. But generally, I guess I have a bias. See, I have a little bias towards depression and disappointment. So when people go, I'm really disappointed that I didn't gain these great realizations, or I'm not the famous blah blah I thought it would be, and it's not all peaches and cream. I feel so good inside. I'm like, thank you. You know, but it's not real like depression disappointment. It's just kind of like settling in disappointment. It's kind of sweet, little sweetly disappointing. but in an enthusiastic disappointment. Like, so it's so nice being, you know. It's our Vajrayana way of kind of letting go, you know, because Hinayana's strategy of letting go is somewhat strategic, like, I'll let go and then I'll be free, right? Kind of that style. You know, like, I'll let go and then I'll be free of it. You know, it's a very strategic plan. But waking up may be somewhat disappointing. Are you still willing to do it? Yeah, thank you. Okay. It could be fantastic. But see, dualistic would be very much, it has to be fantastic or I don't want to do it. Well, what good is it if it doesn't feel fantastic? Something like that, you know, that's real ego setup. You know, they say when sometimes, I don't know, we've all had, big changes, which are maybe good, but then there's kind of a depression afterwards. You know, I can't speak to postpartum depression, but sometimes it's depression after you graduate or depression after some big change. Because adrenaline's drained out and, you know, okay, you're out of jail or, you know, then it's kind of like, well, now what, right? A little disappointing. I was a religious studies major and undergrad, 4 years of Latin, whole deal. So I like to think, you know, Mary Magdalene was kind of disappointed. Went to the tomb empty. Well, so, you know, maybe the disappointment, like, oh, no one's... I mean, there are different versions of empty tomb, of course, in Bible, but like, oh, no one's here. So, it, you know, sometimes necessary for the disappointment to happen for resurrection, right? Have to be really disappointed. My teacher was really good at making me disappointed. Well. Roll to a stop. When that's combined, you know, that kind of willingness to be disappointed combined with kind of the very bodhicitta kind of rah-rah style of a Lotus Sutra, then it becomes very powerful. Then we're really working both sides of the street. So that's the irony, is that some of my teachers, in fact, I think my teacher was kind of basically depressed, but at the same time, extremely enthusiastic. Do you think that could be possible? Yeah. It's not psychology, you know. That's a lot of times, you know, people think, and that's the down. That's kind of a Dharma downfall in America, is we psychologize everything. And since I do it as a profession, I think I'm qualified to say that. You know, so if you really become free, enlightened to Buddha, like, you won't, you know, you won't feel depressed anymore. How many people think if you become free and enlightened, you won't feel depressed anymore? You won't be depressed anymore? Okay, so... Huh? A little bit less? Okay, so when you become free and enlightened, we'll check back with you and see what happens, right? It could go either way, you know? It could go either way. Maybe you won't, maybe you will. But the nice thing about really becoming free is that whether you're depressed or not depressed, you know, life is like that. We're awake. We're still alive. Let's say you had a real disability and you lost a leg or your arm or you couldn't, you know, walk. You wouldn't say, well, I'm hoping that when I become awake, my leg will grow back, right? You'll have a different relationship with your body, perhaps. But it's very possible that, you know, some depression will lift, maybe the whole thing. Or it's possible that actually may become a little bit more sad, you know. Would you be willing to do that for sentient beings? Let's say I woke up, you have all the skills and the powers of a Buddha, you can really help people, but you're a little bit sad. That'd be okay?
Yeah. That sort of perception that they see sentient beings as entities, so that they can, they're not like personally affected by that, but at the same time they have this like compassion that would help them. So like, wouldn't you not be saddened by them if you've gotten to that level?
You might not be, but you could be.
Like,
I'm not saying, yeah. We say that in the Mahayana, so people don't give up. Okay, seriously, you know, we say that. So it is possible that, you know, all these things could happen, like you're depressed and now you're not depressed, or actually it could be, then you're kind of depressed, you know. Because the relative world is just going up and down, right? Yeah, backache, right? Yeah. Yes.
You don't become a different person.
That's what you really need to roll us out. We're not going to become different. So that could be really good news. So you could go, oh, that's cool. I don't want to be a different person. Or you could be kind of disappointed, like, I'm still hoping I'll be a different person, right? Could go either way. Yes, Tom. Yeah, suffering's different. Suffering's like we don't want what we're having right now, which is a crazy world. Yeah. So I get anxious, but I don't get anxious that I get anxious. I don't double up on myself. Okay. So, yeah, whether you just, you know, sun Buddhas, moon Buddhas, right? You know, that's the end of suffering, is we don't have to change our experience. We don't have to say, well, this is no good, I want something else. Because that's the continual process in samsara. You know, the rejection of present moment, hoping that the past or future will save us. But it's so subtle, isn't it? I mean, when we kind of do some of these experimental things, you know, we have to take a look at, like, really, would it be okay just to, like, you know, be... you know, just awake? Can we go either way on it? So just awake would be non-suffering, yeah. You know, whether good comes, fine, whether bad comes, fine, you know, like very Dzogchen style. That, I'm not saying it's easy, you know. One of my Dzogchen teachers said, well, if you have yogurt here, or in this case, nice Ben and Jerry's over here, and you have dog shit from someone else's dog over here, you should see them as the same, right? But that's difficult, isn't it? We always want to, we want the Ben and Cherries, right?
Are you about to
have the heaters or the garbage? Yeah. So, you know, the degree we're able to, you know, develop that constant rejection and constant, you know, craving for some other reality, we're going to overcome the sufferings. But it's difficult because the ego tends to strategize and make up its own version of what that would look like, right? We tend to make up our own version of it. Yes.
For the plan,
between sadness and depression, at least in my own experience with certainly some folk. From that bodhisattva place, seeing sadness, seeing someone starving, seeing someone injured, seeing, you know, all these things, the sadness can arise without becoming, how I see depression, it's a self, it's a down on the self kind of thing. And so you can see sadness, and even not being able to fix it all, there's a space between that sadness and making it part of me or identifying it or something like that. Like you said, it's, I still certainly get anxious about the fact of not getting anxious about my anxiousness.
Yeah, yeah. It's nicer that way, actually.
That's the best I can hope for.
Well, to quote Thich Nhat Hanh, awakening is something like really appreciating you don't have a toothache right now, as much as appreciating the pleasure of having, you know, some good ice cream. So we tend, you know, if we go right down the middle, we also need to fully appreciate, you know, what we're not having as much as what we're having. So it's right down the middle. Yeah. So, you know, we read it in the text, you know, really, you know, the way of Zen is not making preferences, or Dzogchen or Mahamudra is not trying to change the mind at all. But when we do like a mind experiment on ourselves, like, what would we do with the Dalai Lama? What would we do? You know, what do we do? Then we see that we're constantly strategizing, making preferences. You know, but we need to bring that up and let that be worn out. We have to kind of expose ourselves a little bit and say, okay, I'm willing to have that. You know, I'm willing to walk in my shoes and wear them out. Yeah, hope and fear get worn out. The worldly dharmas, gain and loss, hope and fear, pain and pleasure, so forth. Yeah.
So stopping involves sadness?
No, not necessarily. It could. If you have the idea, I'm willing, I will stop, I will do Third Noble Truth, I will decide in one point, you know, decide that the nature of mind is so-and-so, but I don't ever want to be disappointed, sad, or in pain, then what are you doing? Huh? Yeah, cutting through spiritual materialism, Trungpa Rinpoche's probably most famous book, really nails it. We've already decided what our realization is supposed to look like. We've already done double dualism, right? When we roll to a stop, I don't know, you know, it might be really cool, you know, you might like be with your friend in the Chevy and kind of go, hey, gosh, we rolled to a stop, what are we going to do, you know, I don't know, you know, might be fun, could be, yes.
Is that why
it's very dualistic when we've already decided ahead of time what kind of experience we're supposed to have. Okay. The Mahayana Sutras generally, the Lotus Sutra, actually very profound, non-dualistic, but they're using dualistic language as skillful means. You know, if somebody's really depressed and suicidal, sometimes you have to say, you know, actually, this can end and you'll feel a lot better. Isn't that so? You know, because someone's way over on the other side. So developing the wisdom mind is essential. Otherwise, you know, we'll always be steering towards some predetermined experience, which ultimately will lead us to suffering, result in suffering. But it's kind of scary to just think, okay, I know the way out of suffering is not to have, you know, this predetermined idea of what my experience should be, But it's also scary a little bit, isn't it? You see, okay, so that is the world we're working with on the path aspect of Mahamudra and Dzogchen, you know, like some deep knowing that not having these preferences is the way out, but at the same time, we don't want anything negative or bad to happen. There's some leap involved. When we move beyond the Mahayana, there's some kind of leap. It's a leap. You know, it's like, okay, you know, that's why in some of the Zen koans, you know, tiger chasing you, and you leap over the cliff, right? Actually, koan is more like when you jump over the cliff, you discover that there's strawberries, and they're delicious. You see, yeah. So. Yeah. That's actually not the true story.
No.
You know, since I've lived in Zen monastery, I've actually done true koan practice with realized teacher. I can tell you that's not the story. Well, I just told you the story.
It's delicious.
And the wind sounds really beautiful when on the plains, you know, when finally the engine is off. When the Buddha was dying, he said, "Oh, the flowers falling are so beautiful." Yeah. One last question, then I gotta do.
Maybe someone else thinks I'm just kind of clarifying something.
Yeah.
So, Naroda, in one sense, what stops, what cesses, what ceases, is not that first level of interaction. It's not necessarily the anxiety.
Let's say it again.
So
this is Lama thing. Lama says, Jeffrey is a very patient person. At the monastery with my teacher, you would say something, right, that would be make sense, right? So what you did made sense. But then the teacher would say, I don't get it. Could you say it again? And a lot of times we can't say it again because, you know, and why is that? Because we think we said something wrong. So we switch it, right? Isn't it the case?
Not this particular.
Okay, good. So you can just say it all over again the same way.
The way I heard it said.
Okay.
Was that there is Naroda, which is good to remember, right?
Yes.
But what it is that ceases, it's not the initial sensory input or even mind input. It's just the next layers after that, piling on to that.
Dukkha ceases, suffering ceases. You know, it's really an incredible thing to say, okay, I'm willing to have whatever experience I'm having in the present. Because usually we're willing to have things to a certain degree, right? It's hard to say, well, I'm just willing to have it all. Are you willing to have it all?
Sometimes,
okay, good answer, okay. All right. All this was helpful to some people, maybe not helpful, I don't know. But we have to close here. All you really good students appreciate that I can give these teachings. We will be doing another Mahamudra Dzogchen retreat end of April at Lotus View. October is there. Thank you. Did I say April? I guess I want to do one in April, too. All right, another one. Pardon me? Just, they're micro-retreats.
One day or weekend?
Thursday, Saturday, Sunday. So the retreats, however, you know, we have to take refuge before we do the retreat. That's important. Okay, so Omze, should we end now?